was, yeah, interesting. Quite an emotional journey.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I manage our online coverage of TV and movies here at SBS, and I'm joined by my co-host and SBS channel manager, Ben Nguyen. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Fiona. So this week, we get to the bottom of Chinese True Lies in Awkwafina flick The Farewell, and in what we've been watching, Fee spaces out with Brad Pitt's daddy issues in Ad Astra, and I race to catch a serial rapist with Toni Collette in Netflix's Unbelievable.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes.
All right, where do you want to start with this?
Well, let's start with The Farewell.
What's wrong, Dad? Please tell me.
When Nan is dying.
She doesn't know, so you can't say anything. The family thinks it's better not to tell her.
Why is that better?
Chinese people have saying, when people get cancer, they die.
So, caring for a loved one with a terminal illness is hard enough, but what if they didn't even know they were sick? That's the true story behind Lulu Wang's movie The Farewell, where a family stage a fake wedding back in Changchun, China, in order to spend precious time with Nai Nai, which means grandmother, who has been diagnosed with untreatable lung cancer, a fact that has been deliberately kept from her. Awkwafina, who audiences will have recently seen in Crazy Rich Asians, stars as Billy, Lulu Wang's on-screen surrogate, who has remained close to her grandmother, played by Zhao Shuzhen, despite spending most of her life growing up in the US. This clash of cultures is at the heart of the conflict in The Farewell, with Billy guilt-stricken about the deception the family is heaping on Nai Nai, which they defend as a Chinese tradition of bearing collective responsibility so that she doesn't have to suffer. It leads to a comedy of manners as every dinner and wedding speech becomes imbued with double meaning. Fee, it's a movie really rich with observations about Chinese culture and family, but I must admit it left me a little cold. How did you find it?
That's interesting. I was quite touched by it. I think, well, I certainly wasn't wrecked to tears. Like, it didn't devastate me, but I think it's a really manages to walk that line where it's a melancholy. It's not a it's not a tearjerker, but it's, you know, dealing with anticipation of grief and, like, living with a lie with the best of intentions, but it's still a lie, and it's with your beloved grandmother. No, I think it really dealt with the emotions really well. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something to do with my expectations. I think that
maybe.
I did think I was really going to get caught up in that emotion, and some of the characters in the movie, you know, are sort of hugely filled with grief.
Yeah.
But it is a very gentle film. I think that it perhaps deliberately avoids pushing those emotional buttons sort of too hard. I think, you know, and it's obviously based on her actual experience of this happening within her family, but about sort of someone trying to navigate that space between grief and celebration of a life, you know, while that person is still living.
Exactly, make the most of the time that they've got left, And I think it's intentional it's not too emotional, because the whole point is that everyone has to hide their emotions throughout the whole thing. Like, they can't let on that there's this devastating fact about Nai Nai, that they say it in the film, but sort of basically cancer equals death. Like, it's not actually the having of the cancer, it's the knowing you've got the cancer that ultimately does you in. So, yeah, a Chinese proverb they quote, and that's kind of what they adhere to, because apparently it's quite a common practice in China to for the families to put on a happy face and not let on to the someone who's got a diagnosis of cancer.
Yeah, as the movie reveals. And I think sort of the character of Billy is trying to – her internal struggle is all about, you know, as they put it, her American desire just to kind of put it all out there rather than this sort of Chinese tradition of holding things in for the greater good.
Yeah, basically it's not about you. Like, don't – it's not for you to tell. Like, it's not your fact. It's not your truth bomb. And I think, yeah, the way it deals with Awkwafina as having been born in China but relocating as a small child, and her memories of China are quite vague now because she's early 30s, having grown up in America. But at first her parents don't want to tell her that her grandmother is dying. There is a fake wedding, as we say, that's been trumped up to get all the family back together. But her parents don't want to let on because everyone thinks she's too American now and she's going to give the game away.
Well, I think that what it does really beautifully, the film, is examine that migrant experience because through multiple generations. So you have not only the grandmother who's stayed behind in the home country and some of the family who have as well, but generally sort of her kids have spread their wings and travelled elsewhere and for multiple reasons. And then so you have Awkwafina's character's parents who have their own experience as first-generation migrants and leaving all their family connections behind and having to rebuild in the States, and then her own experience, who, you know, she's sort of done well at university and chasing fellowships and, you know, it's sort of she's got the world's her oyster to a degree. And their connection with Chinese culture is very strong, but shaped by their own experience having left China, which is really just very resonant. I think that there's so much very specific cultural knowledge in this film, and you know, it's a time in which we're talking about the pros and cons of politicians having various connections to China and what that means. And I think that it's great for us to inform ourselves about what that experience is actually like and those connections with you know, the country that you came from.
No, absolutely. And there's a beautiful scene. I mean, there's so many wonderful scenes around dinner table and, like, don't see this film if you're hungry, if you haven't eaten. My God.
Well, but, I hadn't. I was starving.
Yeah. It's beautiful and abundant banquets of delicious food. But there's one particular scene where they're having this conversation and it's sort of there's a ray of food going around. Like, not really a lazy Susan. It's but anyway, that's, I'm focusing on the food. About Billy's family in America and the other family who have relocated to Japan, but then there's a family who have stayed, but they're still going to send a son to the US for education. And there's just, they were interrogating all the pros and cons and there's no judgment or that, you know, there's a little bit of judgment in the conversation in the, that they're having, but the film doesn't really take a view. It's just a authentic conversation about, that really interrogates all the pros and cons of staying or leaving. And it weighs it all up without landing on a side. And I think that's really important. It's just a, you're a fly on the wall to this family politics and dynamics and just genuine, just a family conversation, but with through this whole lens of the real reason why they're back and no one's really having that really frank conversation with the woman who they're all there to see.
That was a beautiful scene and shot beautifully as the film, all of the film is. I also remember, you know, seeing in that scene you get the neon signs kind of coming through the windows in the backdrop. I remember there's a sort of a lot of really beautiful moments in the way that they're staged. There's a scene which, again, is sort of family members sharing their experiences and telling truth to each other, but it's told while Billy and her mum are searching around on the carpet for a dropped earring.
Yeah.
And just those little moments just feel so real and well observed.
No, so true. And I just love the way this film was made, like those kind of points, like you say, and some scenes cut early, like it's just a quick, and it doesn't let, because I guess to the whole point of it not being overly emotional as well, like it says what it has to and then it's out, like it's on to the next sort of scene. And there are some scenes like with a handsome doctor who speaks English and, of course, her grandmother wants to set her up with him.
Yeah.
But another film would take the liberty of trying to see, you know, find a reason to get her back to the hospital and there's the hot doctor. But, you know, obviously it's based on Lulu Wang's experience. But you could sort of see how another director might do this film and play it more for laughs and play more of the clash of cultures. But, no, it's just, it is underplayed and I think it's beautiful. Yeah. I had a bit of a lump in my throat when I left, but it, didn't quite spill over into sobbing in the foyer of event cinemas.
Yeah, it reminded me of a film which I haven't seen for a very long time, but I saw years ago back on SBS called The Wedding Banquet, Ang Lee's film, which is also about someone, a Chinese-American, who's staging a fake Chinese wedding.
Mm.
And it's got all those elements of, you know, those very acute observations of what it's like for someone who's moving between those American and Chinese culture. So, yeah, I mean, it made me actually want to seek that out again and watch it again.
Mm. You know, yeah, good point. And Awkwafina is so good in this because, as you say, she's kind of been the support character, like you mentioned in Crazy Rich Asians, she was sort of the weird
relief.
Friend. Comic relief, totally. And also in that Ocean's movie that was the gender swap. I want to say Ocean's 8, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, she's fine in those roles, but her manner, which is kind of a bit introspective and sarcastic, and that works here because she's hiding a very big secret and she is feeling uncomfortable and awkward and just kind of wants to blurt it out and but through the film has to accept that it's not really her news to break.
She has to carry the film and she's very, very good.
She really is.
And I think that we'll have a very interesting career. I think, you know, sort of something that is great to see is this moment of increasing Asian casts in these sort of films that are getting fairly wide releases. Mm. So only read a little bit about the making of this movie, but I think that Lulu Wang had to fight for a long time that she saw this as an American film,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't want this to be seen as a foreign language film or a film that came from outside the US. For her, it was an American story.
Mm.
And also it's sort of interesting just, you know, Awkwafina had to basically learn Mandarin for the film, and they sort of incorporate that in a way, her sort of halting Chinese, which is not as good as those around her, is sort of explained by the fact that she's been away from China for so many years.
Yeah. But it does effortlessly go between English and in language, and it's that's fantastic that it is intentionally an American film, because also I noticed that the titles are dual language. There's not a subtitle of the name of the film, and it's very important optics to be doing that. And I think it's a beautiful film, and this was a huge hit in America. Like, released as an indie, but actually word of mouth was really strong on it. In Australia, it closed the Melbourne International Film Festival to raves. Yeah, it's not a huge release here. It's not in every cinema, but it is in some multiplexes. That's how I saw it.
Mm.
So do seek it out. You know, other films come along in the swamp, the session times. So yeah, highly recommend The Farewell.
Yeah, great. And now it's time for what we've been watching. Fee, what have you been watching?
Well, as mentioned, I saw The Farewell in a multiplex, and I did a double session, really, a double melancholic session of The Farewell followed by Ad Astra, new Brad Pitt.
Was it an identical experience?
same, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but thematically, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. Quite an emotional journey last night when I was out of one and into the other with a break for all the ads and the trailers. But anyway, that's by the by. But Ad Astra sees Brad Pitt play astronaut Roy McBride, who travels to the outer edges of the solar system to find his missing father, played by Tommy Lee Jones.
Major, we have some highly classified information.
What can you tell us about the LIMA project?
Its objective was to search for advanced extraterrestrial life. The ship disappeared approximately 16 years into the mission.
And the commander was?
He was my father, sir.
This might come as quite a shock to you.
And the intention is to unravel a mystery that threatens the survival of our planet, no less.
Ooh.
Right? So his journey uncovers a lot of secrets that challenge the nature of human existence and our place in the cosmos.
Wow. I've been seeing the trailers and ads for this, and I don't know. It looks like it could either be really great or really terrible. I can't tell. So tell me, which one is it?
Well, it probably depends on who you ask and what their expectations were going in, because at the session I went to last night, I love it. I'll say that off the bat. I think it was wondrous.
Mm.
The bunch of young gentlemen who came in with their buckets of popcorn and their giant soft drinks midway through the trailers and were quite noisy. Yeah, not so much. They came in expecting a much different film, a bit of a space adventure, which this has elements of, but broadly, no, this is a very contemplative existential drama. Mm. And there's long scenes of silence and Brad Pitt's monologue. Am I selling it enough? So, if you're expecting Guardians of the Galaxy, you're going to be very sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
So, know what you're going in for and then just let it wash over you.
Well, I feel like there's a tradition of space movies, you know, going back to 2001 that you know, are sort of more interested in the human condition, particularly, you know, through, you know, one individual's psychology.
Absolutely.
than sort of maybe a more recent example might be something like Interstellar.
Yeah, Gravity, Solaris, Moon.
Yeah,
like it's not breaking new ground here, but it's, they all deal with sort of the isolation and the silence of space, and it gives you time to really examine your place in the universe, quite literally. And yeah, I think here it's quite wonderful, and Brad Pitt is very, very good. How is he getting better? We were just talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just recently, but it's wonderful, and also in the way it plays on what we know of Brad Pitt as a celebrity, one half of what was formerly known as Brangelina, because part of what he's contemplating is a failed relationship. He's been a shitty partner, and he's reflecting on that, but also not letting it get into too much of his head, because he's got this mission to find the father who's been absent for the bulk of his life.
I noticed you tweeted something about a Brangelina link in the scheduling of a trailer.
Right. No, seriously, that was quite legitimate. At the session I went to, that right before Ad Astra played, there was a trailer for Maleficent 2 with none other than the other half of what was formerly known as Brangelina.
Yeah, so I was just trying to plant that seed.
I know. I thought that's interesting from the newly merged, no pun intended, but Disney-Fox, trailer in front of the Fox movie, a new union, hinting to a now abandoned one. Yeah. Curious. Anyway, because, it can't not get into your head the way it's Brad Pitt and, of course, what we know of him as a celebrity. But and on that, Liv Tyler has a very limited role as sort of his former partner, and she's seen in glimpses. Yeah, it's not much of a role. She's kind of the phantom of a failed relationship. Mm. But in truth, everyone in this film, like, he's in his head. It's in another movie, I might be bothered by the depiction of the partner, but it's important that she's seen that way, because he's reflecting on how he's kind of seen her that way the whole time. So
that feels like sort of also these kind of movies do have, because of that physical space, obviously, between two partners is a way to explore that disconnection in a relationship.
Yeah. I love it. I was there entirely for it. And there are some lines of dialogue where I thought, I cringe a little bit at that, just some of the framing of the way he speaks. But then it's completely intentional. It makes sense. He's quite guarded and sort of speaks in aphorisms a little bit. And throughout the course of the film, that breaks down, and he's kind of a American hero son, or he's a wannabe American hero, son of an American hero astronaut, living in the shadow of his dad, off to on a top secret mission to find out what happened to his dad. Yeah, so the way he changes across the course of the film is fascinating, and his heartbeat plays a role in this as well, sort of how he can manage his mood and his emotions and keep them in check, or not, as he goes deeper into the universe / his own psyche and his backstory. And yeah. And like we were saying, like, there is a lot of comparisons being drawn to 2001 and Gravity and et cetera. But for me, I think maybe it's the fact that it's Brad Pitt, but a little bit to the Tree of Life a decade or so ago almost, which again dealt with a father and son relationship, but across jumped timelines.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt played the aloof.
Very far in time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually, to the inception of the universe. Yeah. With a space segment. the Terrence Malick film, which actually...
Yeah, which 2001 did as well. Anyway.
Yes, true. All of it, with Douglas Trumbull doing the effects. Well said. And Tree of Life is actually available at SBS On Demand, coincidentally. Not why I'm bringing it up. But that film, it's about the father and son disjointed timelines. In that case, Brad Pitt played the absent father. So quite wonderful. So go see it.
Yeah, great. I'm keen.
Yeah, maybe after you go see The Farewell, jump into the next session like I did. what have you been watching?
So I have been watching Unbelievable on Netflix, which launched recently. So this comes from writer Susanna Grant. She wrote the screenplay for Erin Brockovich, for example. Mm. I didn't realise this watching it until I did a bit of research for the show, but this is actually based on a true story as well.
An unbelievable one, though.
Well, the titles of the show, so Unbelievable comes up on the screen and then sort of fades out but leaves the lie part. So it kicks off with a very young woman, Marie, Caitlin Dever, who has just called 911. And she is claiming that she has been raped.
I know this is hard, but I need to ask you some questions about what happened.
He tied my hands. He said if I screamed, he'd kill me.
No signs of forced entry. Doors and windows were locked. No DNA. Not a single neighbor saw or heard a thing.
He brought a blindfold, but nothing to tie her with. Would a shoelace even hold her?
You think Marie made up the attack?
I'm pretty positive that it happened.
So we see the police as they get her to tell her story. And what's quite traumatic for her as a character, but also for us as an audience, is the number of times that she's forced to retell this story over and over and over again. So immediately we're thrown into the trauma of her having to relive this experience. And then what begins to emerge is some doubt in the minds of the detectives on the case, and also in the minds of those people who are close to Marie, who's someone who has been in foster care and has a history of abuse for a very long time in her life. And so question marks are raised about whether the story she's telling is true or not. And that's sort of where the lie comes from. And we as an audience don't necessarily know that. So there's that question of, did this happen or not?
Sure.
And
so we see it from the telling. We don't see a flashback or to the act. It's in the telling. And
we
then
see, as she tells it, we see moments.
Okay.
But we it don't necessarily know the authenticity of those moments. Yep. I guess sort of our perception of that is shifting because she begins to change her story. So that's the setup.
Yeah, right.
Then, and so this is in Washington State. Then we jump to Colorado, where a police detective, Karen Duvall, played by Merritt Weaver, she is investigating a similar case of rape. And one thing that we immediately get is a very different approach in the way that she speaks to the survivor of that rape compared to the way that the male detective spoke to Marie. And then it's not until the end of the second episode. I mean, I went all in for this. I binged it across two nights. And there's eight episodes in total. It's not until the end of the second episode that Toni Collette's character is introduced as another police detective in a different county in Colorado who is also investigating a similar case of rape.
Okay.
So it takes its time to sort of set up those pieces, but what we ultimately get is the two detectives, Toni Collette's character, Grace Rasmussen, and Detective Duvall, who, once they realise the similarities between their two cases, they begin to suspect that this could be the same perpetrator. So they join forces. So I wouldn't describe it as buddy cop, but the relationship between those two detectives becomes the heart of the series going forward. And I think why it really, really works is it's utterly procedural. We get a little bit of insight into the lives of these two detectives. So Toni Collette is the more senior of the two. She's sort of the more cynical. She's a very sort of tough woman who's done her time as an undercover cop. She does have a partner who she confides in, but she's very driven by her work. I mean, they're both driven by their work, but the Duvall character is a Christian. She's got two children. Her home life is quite different to that of Toni Collette's character. So each of them brings something different in the way that they investigate this case. But then sort of in some ways, I think the show is not that dissimilar from something like Law and Order SVU. It could sort of almost be an extended episode of a case in that show. But I think that that really works. I think that it was felt refreshing not to have the kind of true detective, tortured, existential detectives, you know, sort of dealing with their own demons as they try and uncover the case. You know, these are very, very professional women, and it's a very challenging case for them to solve. But I think that the show, as much as anything, is a celebration of these women who are really top professionals. And we see that time and time again across the series that, you know, there's a lot of women from very different professions who collaborate on the case, and it really is those women that lead the story. And that felt new to me. That felt, felt really strong. And I think that the other sort of thread that the series tries to make this point as strongly as possible is that men who have a history of violence at home are much more likely to commit these kind of crimes, so that it has a strong point to make about domestic violence, and even to the point that something like half of male police have a history of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes one of the threads in terms of their investigation. But I think it's a series, and I didn't realise, like I said, that it was based on reality, but it's certainly, I think, very intent on grappling with the reality of crimes against women.
Mm. Wow, you've sold me. Because I was going to ask, is it like True Detective? But, to hear that it's more in line with a procedural like a Law & Order SVU, which there's a reason that's been going for 72,000 seasons. It's, you know, it does what it does. And when a procedural works, it's great. Like, yeah, I think if it heads to a genre and to a method of storytelling and it tells a great story and it does it really well, well, you know, it's a win.
Yeah, yeah. You have that story of these two women trying to solve the case and then that's intercut with Marie's story as you sort of try and understand her as a very damaged human being and how she's dealing with what she's been through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I can tell. All right, well, that's one to binge, and that's on Netflix, yeah?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Well, we've gone to a lot of places, to the depths of space and to policing in the US.
That's right. That's all we've got for this week, but make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts and give us lots of stars, leave a nice review because it helps people to find the show. And you can let us know what you thought of the movies and TV shows we discussed on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. And I'm on Twitter at Ben Nguyen TV.
And I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
Until next week.
Thanks for listening.